Chapter 5. When I woke up the next time, it was late morning, and my mind was much clearer. So was my vision, and the first thing I saw when I opened my eyes was that Dan wasn't there. The nurse brought my breakfast tray and made enough cheerful small talk to start my head pounding again. "How long have I been here?" I asked. "And where is here? Cardiff?" That amused her. "Haverford West, dearie. Cardiff," she chuckled, making some notes on my chart. "You've been here 72 hours. When can I get out?" Always a sensitive point with me in any hospital stay. For some reason, that seemed to amuse her, too. "Between your friends from the press and your movie star mates, I believe we'll be checking out shortly." "The press?" I asked, losing all appetite for my breakfast. Not that I'd had much to begin with. I'd never been a big fan of the news media, and after all the publicity following Steve's arrest and trial, I hated reporters with a passion. "Well, film stars are not such a novelty here, thanks to Doctor Who and Torchwood, but I suppose anyone in your business is still news, yeah?" She was shaking her head in recollection of someone's bad behavior, hopefully not my own, as she bustled out. I poked my fork at something that resembled a hockey puck, but was apparently pudding. Nothing Bill Cosby would recognize, certainly. I'd wanted to ask her about Dan. The previous 72 hours were a jumble of confused recollection and feverish dreams. I was increasingly sure that I'd hallucinated Dan. I couldn't make myself ask, though. Couldn't yet face that confirmation. I wanted to hope a little while longer that he had been there, that he did still care for me, that whatever had happened, it wasn't really over. Listlessly, I tried to saw off a bite of pudding. Not easy to do with a sprained wrist. What had happened between us? Why couldn't I remember? I pushed the tray away, rested my arm over my eyes, gave in to quiet grief. But there's no privacy in a hospital. The door opened, and I wiped hastily at my face. I must not have been quick enough, though, because there was a pause. And then Dan demanded, "What's wrong?" His voice was hard, aggressive. "Did one of those fucking reporters get in here?" I turned. So relieved to hear his voice, I missed the bit about the gentleman of the press trying to get access to my room. He stood in the doorway, tall, tanned, vital, and totally out of place in this sterile and bleached environment. His dark hair glistened, wet freckled the shoulders of his raincoat. He wore a hard yet faintly anxious expression. I don't think I'm a good enough actor to hide what I felt, even if I'd wanted to. He was across the linoleum square of room in two steps, folding me in strong arms. The chill of his raincoat was a shock against my overwarm skin, his cheek smoothly shaven and cold. It was like real life bursting into a dream. "What happened? Did something happen? Sean." I buried my face in his neck, and he stroked my back, the raincoat crinkling as he moved. "Is it your head? Are you in pain?" I shook my head. No way could I look up until I got my face under control, and that was harder to do than it should have been. I could feel him thinking, discarding possibilities. He continued to hold me with that fierce protectiveness, and I told myself it couldn't be that bad. Whatever it was that I couldn't quite remember, he was here now. "I ran out to get something to eat. Then I got caught talking to your producer on the phone, giving him an update." Insistently, but more gently, he asked, "Are you going to tell me what's going on?" Maybe it wasn't love. I couldn't tell anymore, but he cared. He had come when I needed him. I pulled away, roughly wiped my face again on my pajama sleeve, said, "Sorry, I don't know what that was about. I thought..."
"What?"
I met his gaze steadily. "I thought I dreamed you up."
Was that wariness in his eyes? "Why would you think that?"
"Because I'm an idiot." But he didn't crack a smile.
"You're not an idiot. You're concussed is all, and a little confused."
I said,
Maybe I'm confused, but I love you. And it's obvious I've fucked things up somehow. That look, I was beginning to recognize. The guarded, doubtful look. Look, Sean. I said, I can feel it. You're being... My voice gave out for an instant. Great with me. But it's all... It's gone wrong. You don't feel the same way, but I do. So I know that whatever it is, it's my fault. I ruined it like I do everything. Whoa. His hands bit into my arms as he pulled back to scrutinize my face. That's enough of that. It was his cop voice, the voice he rarely, if ever, used on me. You're supposed to work this out on your own, but you're worrying yourself sick over it, and there isn't any need for it. I sniffed, blinked at him, waited. Dan said carefully, There isn't anything for you to blame yourself for, and I haven't stopped loving you. You're the one who changed. He took a deep breath. You're the one who ended things. You left me, Sean. When it came down to it, Sean had very little practical experience. The determination was there. The spirit was willing, but he was still a virgin in many ways. He could flirt. He could talk a good line. That was really just acting. But getting naked with someone was about more than shedding clothes. And as Steve had once put it, Sean had more hang-ups than a cheap cell phone. It hadn't lasted long with Steve, but it had been mostly good. Granted, Steve understood Sean's limitations better than most. Steve knew better than to push. In the end, it had not been the sex that split them up, although Sean was painfully aware he had not truly managed to satisfy Steve as a lover. There had been a couple of other anonymous encounters at parties when he'd had too much to drink. Afterward, embarrassing encounters that he preferred not to remember, although he had managed to convince his audience. Standing ovations all around, in fact. Confronted with the real thing, with the knowledge that there would be no fooling someone like Dan with glib tongue and skillful hands, that there was an expectation of sophistication and savoir-faire and sincerity, he thought he might just crumble in another panic attack. As he stripped himself with ice-cold hands, he was conscious of a dizzy mix of desire and terror. He wanted Dan more than anything he'd ever wanted in his life, and to fail at this, he wasn't sure he could bear it. At the same time, his heart was knocking at his ribs, begging to be excused, begging to be let out of this moment. He already knew Dan was going to want too much. Everything. Someone like Dan had a reasonable expectation of everything. He deserved everything. The problem was that even if Sean gave him everything he had, it was unlikely to be enough. Sean was not like Dan. He was painfully aware of how unlike Dan he was as he watched the other man undress in the subdued light of the bedroom. The bedroom that would be theirs if Sean could manage once, just for once in his life, to react like a normal person. The lamplight gleamed off the muscular planes of Dan's shoulders and chest. Dan glanced up, his eyes very blue, and he smiled at Sean. It was not the whiteness of his smile, but the sweetness that pierced Sean's heart. He smiled back, giving the performance of a lifetime, while the blood rushed away from his head and the room dimmed a little. He could hear the heavy pulse of the sea a few yards away. Naked, his cock jutting up proud and glossy and moist with excitement, Dan walked over to him and took Sean unhurriedly into his arms. Sean leaned against him, grateful for the support, grateful for a few moments' reprieve while they simply held each other, getting used to each other, and getting used to how it felt to be in each other's arms. His hands roved over satin smooth skin, clutching Dan's back. Dan's hands moved caressingly, almost soothingly, as Sean shivered. His cock perked up a little. Their lips met, and Sean opened to the kiss, expecting the inevitable invasion, plundering. But Dan just pressed his mouth warmly against Sean's, and then he was kissing Sean's face, a delicate rainfall of tiny kisses. Sean opened his eyes and began to laugh. Dan was smiling too. It was playful and unthreatening. His mouth took Sean's again, and this time, when Sean parted his lips, Dan's tongue slipped into the dark recess, exploring discreetly. Sean murmured, and Dan withdrew at once, teasingly grazing Sean's lips once more. But it had been pleasure, not rejection, and Sean opened his mouth once again, offering access. Dan's kiss deepened, and Sean's tongue thrust reticently against the slick heat of Dan's. It was disconcertingly personal, but he liked it. Then Dan was guiding them over to the bed and the cool expanse of clean sheets and soft pillows. Sean tensed a little. This was it. The moment of truth. But Dan kept kissing him, kept caressing him, and he was being settled in a cloud of linen and blankets and cradling arms. There was nothing to be frightened of here. This was Dan. Dan, who would have been willing to step in front of a bullet to protect him, and who surely would not hurt him now. "It's real with us, isn't it?" Sean asked, gazing up. "I've never felt anything more real," Dan assured gruffly. There was more kissing and petting, and then Dan moved down the bed, settling on his knees, and wide-eyed, Sean watched himself, his hard, thick, and throbbing self, taken into Dan's beautiful mouth. It was like being wrapped in hot, black velvet. Sean murmured again, but this time Dan didn't mistake it for anything but what it was, an incoherent and desperate pleasure. When Dan slowly withdrew his mouth, it was only to run the rasp of his tongue on the sensitive underside of Sean's cock. Sean was still shivering, but now it was with sensation. Dan tongued the pink slit of Sean's prick, taking his time, exquisite minutes, but not too many minutes before Sean was coming hard in convulsions of shock delight, a new kind of ECT. There is something different about fucking with someone you know and care for. Well, the obvious answer is that one is intercourse and the other is making love, although that sounds cliche. But there is vulnerability, an openness after sex with someone you trust and know, or trust that you want to know, and you tell them things that you would never otherwise say. The morning after our first night together, we rose late and fixed hot coffee and a lavish breakfast, then carried the tray back to the bedroom and rearranged ourselves in the nest of pillows and blankets. Dan had picked up the mail from the house the day before. I was sorting through it, flipping through cards and letters without fear for the first time in a year, while he glanced through Variety. Watching him, watching that derisive quirk of his mouth, I asked, "Do you think you could handle life in a goldfish bowl?" He gave me a level look. "I know how to swim," he said, "and I don't give a damn about who's watching, provided I like the other fish." I looked down at my coffee cup, and my smile must have been odd, because he said seriously, "Are you sure you can handle it?" "Me?" I shrugged. "I love what I do. I don't want to do anything else. I don't know how to do anything else." "Okay, but that's not really an answer. You're a very private person. If it comes out that you're seeing someone, living with someone..." He studied me. "Are you sure that's what you want?"
No, I wasn't, but we were past the dating stage. That much was clear to me. We were way beyond the what kind of movies / Chinese or Italian / are you a morning or a nighttime person questions. The life or death stuff puts the rest into perspective. Besides, after a month of living together, I already knew Dan was a man I could care deeply for. If I had, God forbid, joined one of those dating services and been asked to list everything I was looking for in a potential mate, that list of traits would have pretty much described Dan. He was strong, but strong enough to be gentle. He was honest, but he was kind too. He had a sense of humor, and he was the definition of sexy, or at least my definition of sexy. He was smart, and he was sensitive, or at least as sensitive as someone in his line of work could be. Okay, maybe he wasn't particularly sensitive, and he was a little on the domineering side, and he did pretty much believe that he knew best 100% of the time, and he was kind of a neat freak. But man, he smelled good, and I never dreamed anyone could be that skilled in bed, that there could even be that difference in levels of skill. If they gave out degrees in fucking, Dan would be a black belt. The only real question was, would what was between us last? And how did people figure that out except by trying? I said, I already know I want you, all the time, and I like you better than anyone I ever met in my life. He laughed. I'm serious. Okay, well, same here. The thing is, I stopped, gearing myself up for this. It had to be said. It was only fair to him. I don't know how good a risk I am. He was watching me attentively, hearing me out, not instantly dismissing my fears as nonsense. I appreciated it, because it wasn't easy to admit this. I don't mean that I wouldn't be faithful. I don't have a bad track record. It's more like I don't have any track record. Not much of one, anyway. I added hastily. But I do my best. I want this. Me too. I fiddled with my empty coffee cup. He covered my hand. Just say it, he advised. You already know I had a breakdown in high school. He opened his mouth as though to say something, but then didn't. I knew from the time I was really young that I had feelings for, wasn't interested in girls. And when I finally figured out what that meant, I swallowed. Horrified. I didn't want it to be true. I knew how my family would feel. I knew what my friends would think. I didn't want to be looked at that way. I didn't want to be looked at any way at all. He said, teasing but very gentle, so you went into acting. It sounds contradictory, I know, but it allowed me a chance to escape for a while, to be someone else, to express myself without having to be myself. I'm sure it made no sense whatsoever, but he nodded once, encouragingly. But then, this was when you were in a separate piece, he interrupted. Yes, at first it was great, what I'd hoped. But then kids started talking about, there was a rumor that your schoolmates began speculating about whether you were gay or not. Elementary, my dear Sean. No one picked up clues and deduced the right answers faster than Dan. I nodded. It was more than speculation. I wasn't popular. I mean, I was popular, but there was a group that, I don't even know why, but they hated me. And they used to, it's embarrassing to admit how the shit bothers you when you're a kid, but they harassed you, Dan said evenly. I guess that's the word for it. Like, I'd walk into a classroom and someone would cough loudly and say the word queer. Someone spray-painted sucks dick on my locker. The janitors never did get it completely off. It was always there below the surface paint. Anyway, I don't know if it would have been worse or better if it had been true, but I used to masturbate myself to sleep thinking about sucking guys' dicks or having a guy suck mine. As a side note, I'd like to volunteer for a full-time position. I tried to match the lightness of his tone. No pun intended. I was already deciding that I couldn't tell him everything, that this was enough for anyone to accept. Anyway, I couldn't take it. I thought it would be better if I just checked out. After a tiny pause while Dan waited for me to say something else, he said, Well, I'm glad the early checkout was interrupted. I've been waiting my entire life for you. I'd hate to think you left without me. I barely acknowledged this. I told you about the misdiagnosis and all that. About being treated as bipolar when you weren't. Right. But not everyone agrees that I was misdiagnosed. I had a doctor tell me that without the right help, I was going to be in and out of institutions for the rest of my life. And even the shrink who had believed I was misdiagnosed had been insistent that I needed to remain under a doctor's care. Critical, she had said, 3 times. I'm a cop, Dan said. I have to tell you that normal is pretty much relative. Compared to the people I deal with most of the time, you're one of the sanest people around. I understand that you've had some problems. If this is a way of offering me a chance to bow out gracefully, I decline. When it comes to you, I'm willing to take the chance.